Governor Holcomb delivers his State of the State address. Sunday Sales takes a historic step. That, plus Luke Messer's plan for the Senate and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 12th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb sought to reassure Hoosiers during his State of the State address that his administration will do, quote, whatever it takes to fix problems at the Department of Child Services.
In recent weeks,
Holcomb waited until close to the end of his speech to address the elephant in the room, controversy at DCS that erupted after former agency director Mary Beth Bonaventura's scathing resignation letter. Holcomb didn't say much. He assured people he's committed to the issue, thanked caseworkers, and applauded his choice for new DCS director Terry Stigdon. Holcomb also touched on his decision to hire a consultant to review the agency.
We've engaged outside experts to conduct a complete assessment of the safety and welfare of our children. We'll be transparent, and we'll provide you directly with progress reports.
The Holcomb administration says there will be at least two progress reports delivered to lawmakers and the public before the legislative session ends in mid-March. Did Governor Holcomb deliver the message on DCS that Hoosiers needed to hear? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Governor Holcomb promised progress reports for lawmakers before the end of session. Is that the right step here?
It's ridiculous. It is a total lack of leadership. Okay? When Mitch Daniels was in 2006, in response to yet another embarrassing crisis in protecting Hoosier children, he established DCS, and he put a goal in place that by 2008, caseworkers would have no more than 12 active cases and no more than 17 children involved. They're not meeting that. Supreme Court says they can't meet that. They know they're supposed to meet that. In fact, Governor Holcomb was part of that administration. And here we are, that was supposed to be in 2008. Now we're in 2018, and he's still talking about studying the problem. The DCS workers are overworked, and they're underpaid. A $34,000 salary for that job is absurd, and we're not even training them sufficiently. So that's a total lack of leadership. We've had all of these, quote, fixes. We had the call center that Mike Pence put in place that was going to fix the problem. Now we're going to study it yet again. He needs to step forward and do what he needs to do, restrict the number of cases that these workers have, hire enough caseworkers, pay them adequate salaries. They have to have a degree, and they probably all have student loans, and they have to pay rent and everything else on $34,000 with that kind of stress. That total lack of leadership and punting it on down the road is typical of the Republican administrations over the last 5 years. And he should be embarrassed putting forward yet another study of the same problem.
Do you think Hoosiers are getting a sense of urgency from Republican leaders, Eric Holcomb and the legislators?
I think they are. One, the appropriation went up $550 million in the last cycle. We're in that budget right now. You could argue almost that we're doing the Democrat plan. When this first happened, Democrats said, we need to investigate what's going on at DCS. And Governor Holcomb said, yeah, you're right. We need to investigate what's going on at DCS and come up with, one, identify the real structure. If there's structural systemic issues, let's identify them and go fix them. And if we need more money, we'll spend more money. In the context of this legislative session, which is a short, we have 8 weeks left in this legislative session, this review is scheduled to end at the end of March, and they're going to give incremental updates to legislators as that process is unfolding. So they addressed it immediately when Judge Bonaventura departed. But Democrats have moved on and said, well, now we need legislation. We don't know what goes in that bill because we haven't finished this investigation, which everyone agreed at the time was the path we needed to go down and identify exactly systemically what are the problems of DCS. One of them we know is technology. And that was going to be addressed anyway, but and will be. So I think we're on the administration's on the right track. They're doing the right things to identify the facts and then address those.
So Mitch Daniels' proposed solution to this is just smoke. It wasn't worth talking about. It wasn't worth doing.
The state hired 800 new caseworkers in 2005.
And now they don't
increased
have
the budget and met all those.
They met all those
benchmarks that we met.
Those.
We met them then. We're not
meeting them now
because this opiate crisis, the caseloads have exploded,
and because we're not paying enough and hiring enough.
John Schwanes, do you think Hoosiers are getting a sense of urgency from Republican leaders?
I think there is an agreement that there is urgency. I think they are willing, for the most part, I sense, to agree with the notion that there needs to be aggressive fact-finding. Because there are, we can say in general terms, too few caseworkers, poorly compensated, handling too many cases. But that doesn't necessarily constitute a fix. So the fact-finding that is underway...
It's a great first step, if they'd ever implement it.
But I don't know what bill would fix that.
They passed it in 2006.
Here's the disconnect. For those who think that there's a lot of intrigue here, and I'll just from a pure Machiavellian sense here, if Eric Holcomb wanted to commit political suicide and assure that he is going to be a one-term governor, he would poo-poo any findings and push this all under the rug and say there was nothing to see here, move on. Because then if the inevitable happens, all it takes is one death, one tragedy, and he's done. So when you think about it, even if the administration miscalculated somehow before and maybe put the wrong people in place that were
reverted
maybe
the
and
money,
people were hamstrung and maybe the money, okay, it would behoove him politically to say that now, because the ultimate tragedy hasn't occurred. No child has lost his or her life, and he can be the white knight saving the day. I just don't understand the political calculation that he's going to cover it up, because that would be foolish.
John Katzenberger, these progress reports that will go to lawmakers, is that the right sort of middle ground here between what Democrats are calling for and what Republicans say need to happen?
Well, given the course that's been plotted by the administration, I think he needs to do that, and it needs to be public. It needs to be very transparent so that you can see where it's going, because I think Ann makes a very good point. The average tenure of caseworkers is very short. They burn out. They don't get paid well. And so they, the training that they do get is lost. You have that churn in the Department of Child Services, and so you do have some very difficult systemic problems. Ann's criticism is fair, but I do think that it's important, if you're going to study this, to come back with incremental progress reports and a detailed study or detailed solutions of how you would administer this, and then do it.
I think stay tuned then, I guess.
Yeah, I think afraid so.
Governor Holcomb also used his State of the State address this week to lay out new specific benchmarks he wants the state and his administration to meet. Holcomb's speech included targets that would see tens of thousands of Hoosiers enrolled in high-demand, high-wage education and job training programs by the end of this year, and a multi-year goal to ensure more people leave the state's prison system having graduated from certificate programs.
Add all this up, and we're talking about more than a million of our fellow Hoosiers that need and can be skilled up.
The governor's new benchmarks aren't limited to workforce development. He also set a goal that within 6 years, Indiana will have a better infant mortality rate than any other state in the Midwest. Mike O'Brien, Speaker Bosma really praised Holcomb for setting these specific targets, which is something that hasn't happened maybe under previous governors or certainly his predecessor. Is it really, as Bosma said, a bold move, though?
Well, I think it is, because the problem's so profound, and he defined specifically also the problem we face, 85,000 open jobs. We have a million jobs in the next 10 years we've got to go that are either going to be created or people are going to retire. 30,000 new job commitments this year, 35,000 is the goal for 2018. So if we don't get the workforce part of this right and start creating a pipeline for training and getting people ready for workforce ready, which is what a lot of this legislative session is about. Republicans in the legislature have a lot of legislation that aligns these programs, drills it down to the local level, coordinates with businesses and local government. If we don't get that part right, it's going to be hard to deliver on a lot of these job commitments that we've seen.
In this area, and specifically, a lot of the benchmarks were on workforce development. Is this a breath of fresh air to have specific goals that we can now say you meet or didn't meet?
Who has been in charge for the last what, 13 years? Okay? Who has been in charge with the Department of Education and the superintendent all but 4 years out of the last, what, 40 years? They just wake up now and say, oh, we've got this problem. Are they asleep at the switch? Or you know, their mantra, we've got to cut corporate taxes. We've got to stop regulations. We've got to maintain a surplus, and we don't have to do anything else. And that's what they've been doing for the last 13 years. And all of a sudden, the light dawns. Well, you know, the problem is that there's been too much one-party control and not enough sharing of ideas and all to get these kinds of things done. I'm not at all impressed by this, except finally he's admitted the fact that they failed.
Is that what this was? Was this an admission
of failure? Admission of failure.
I'm not going to put it in that term. That's Ann's term. She's welcome to do that. But
thank
I will
you.
Say, I will say that it is incumbent on this administration to do what hasn't been done, and that is to make sure that the meat we've been hearing for years about the need to retrain workers, and we have not found the proper formula. And the formula must include employers kicking into this, not just giving the idea and counting on the state to do it for them. They need to contribute to this as well. And I think that, you know, you can look at the building trades and some of the other unions for a good way to implement some of these worker training programs in other areas. You can do that with other industries.
We don't like labor unions.
I understand that, Ann, but it's a good model.
It is a good model.
And it's a cooperative model, and that's what's needed.
Governor Holcomb has sort of tied himself now to something. Could that come back to haunt him?
Oh, I think there is danger in putting specifics to goals. In fact, he was a guest on Indiana Lawmakers this week, available
two
on
for
many
two.
Available on many of these same public television stations and radio stations. I should add.
That's a double.
But I ask him that. I said, when you talk about the specific number of jobs, specific number of inmates
in
who are going to get trained and certified, when you talk about even the number of treatment facilities for opioids from 18 to 27. You know, the easier route is to say we're going to see improvement. Think about it. If we worked in sales and we had our annual review and goal setting for the coming year, would you rather have the boss say, well, you're going to have an increase of 14.5% in gross sales, or would you rather somebody say, work hard, let's see some good numbers? There is a danger attached to this. And I asked the governor about that, and he said it serves as a bit of a motivator to have those specific goals. But you're right, it's not without risk.
I guess another version of stay tuned now. A Senate committee easily and unanimously approved legislation this week to allow grocery, convenience, and liquor stores to sell alcohol on Sundays, marking the first time such legislation has ever advanced in that chamber. You notice
there's no one. Public Policy Committee Chair Ron Alting is the author of the Sunday sales bill. He says a key to its passage is support from both grocery and liquor stores, the first time those groups have ever agreed on the subject. Alting also stresses he doesn't want any changes to the measure. He notes past bills failed in part because the legislature tried to impose extra restrictions on grocery and convenience stores as part of a Sunday sales deal. This year's bill simply allows stores that sell alcohol 6 days of the week to sell it on Sundays from noon to 8 p.m.
John Schwanis, in the past, these measures have generated hours and hours of public testimony, including this past summer during the Special Study Commission. This week, the Senate hearing lasted all of 20 minutes. Is this a sign that things have really finally turned a corner?
I think so. And interestingly, I think this goes back to a conversation that we had as a panel after the Special Commission issued its recommendations and had its vote on this particular issue. And you had
a
various,
pretty overwhelming vote.
Right. And you saw various sides come to the table and say, hey, we've hammered out this agreement. Not just people on the commission, but I'm talking about the constituencies that were vying for market share here. And at the time, you posed the question is, why come out in this manner? And I think the consensus was, well, it's sort of like declaring your candidacy before anybody else can, start raising money. I'm inevitable. I'm going to be the winner. This is what's going to happen. It's a fait accompli. And guess what? I think that's what happened.
Does this belie a little bit the silliness of past years where we spent so much time on it?
No, because you're assuming that it will get passed, and I'm a little more skeptical, I think. I'm not buying it until it gets through the House and the governor has a chance to sign it. I think Senator Alting is answering some of the concerns that some of his constituents had in his district. He took some criticism over the summer, and so I think he's answering that. I do think it's an acknowledgement of, you know, what more can you say after all of the study that has been done. But this has a history of attracting ornaments on a Christmas tree. And it wouldn't be the first time if we saw a lot of amendments at some point in the process and foil the progress of this bill. It'll be up to leadership to ensure that it happens, and we'll have to wait and see.
Well, leadership made this, Senate leadership made this part of their agenda, part of one of their top priorities for the session, made it Senate Bill 1, which is usually a statement of priority. Is this smooth sailing from here on out, or are there speed bumps ahead?
There are always speed bumps, but, you know, only in Indiana, when you finally get to some kind of a consensus on the issue, you have to have different hours on Sunday. You can't just leave it alone. That's what I keep saying, leave it alone. I've thought for years we ought to abolish the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. How about that?
In the House, this the testimony didn't last much longer. It was only about an hour hearing. They didn't take a vote this week. That's scheduled for next week. Do you think it might be a little trickier in the House than it is so far in the Senate?
We'll see. I mean, this committee took 20 minutes because, one, there's agreement among the people that had fought this in the past. So there was really no reason to show up, and there's no fight. Right.
Yeah.
So and there were hours, and, you know, we spent 4 months in summer study with the Alcohol Code Review Commission looking at this. So we'll see. We'll see how good. I mean, I'm kind of with you. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
There's no apparent fight at this time.
You never know.
That has a
weekend.
Way sometimes of changing.
Yeah, that's
well,
right.
Well, and next week there is a hearing on a bill to allow cold beer sales at grocery and convenience stores, and Senator Alting doesn't
that
think that one will go quite as smoothly.
Smooth. Yeah.
So you should probably say it again. Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay
we'll
tuned.
We'll see. Right. Let's go 3 for 3.
No, we
three
have no
for three
so far.
Well, Congressman Luke Messer, a GOP Senate candidate, unveiled this week what he calls his plan to reform the U.S. Senate.
It has become a broken.
Messer declares in a video ad that the U.S. Senate is broken and he has a plan to fix it.
The U.S. Senate is where good ideas go to die. More freedom is the answer. Every Hoosier knows it. We can't let the U.S. Senate stop it from happening.
Messer proposes eliminating the filibuster, dramatically speeding up the judicial nominating process, and imposing term limits in the Senate. John Katzenberger, is Messer's reform plan a good one?
It's a plan. I think that he ought to ask his potential leader of the Senate about what he's thought about that. His attitudes have changed since he became the majority leader. I think Mitch McConnell became the expert on using the levers of disruption to cause these ruptures in the Senate. And now we've got a cycle going. And I do think that I don't think you need to reform it. I think you need to appreciate and respect the traditions and use the process for moving legislation as opposed to stopping legislation and disrupting appointments from the president and other administrative functions. The Senate has become broken. That plan from Representative Messer will not address that. It's not the right idea.
I'm curious specifically about the filibuster thing. He mentions in the video ad that he doesn't like the filibuster because it means a liberal minority will disrupt the will of the people. That's the words he uses. He seems to be forgetting that one party probably won't always be in control there. Is this a bit of a short-sighted plan to reform the U.S. Senate?
That's one way to put it. Perspectives have a way of changing in politics, whether you're on the receiving end of, on the short end of a majority, or on the heavy side of it. Clearly, these rules are there for a reason.
And they use them.
But the Senate traditionally has been, it sees itself as even more deliberative, an even more stringent check on sort of, you know, mass hysteria
from the House.
So if in fact you did away with it, you're effectively, other than the duration of the time served and the actual number of people in that chamber, it effectively becomes just another U.S. House.
Yeah.
And then it's like she wants to do away with the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. Might as well do away with the House, too, because then you've got redundancy. It's two of the same thing.
God, don't put that to a vote.
Which one would be less popular?
I want to ask you this. I mean, obviously, this is not done in a vacuum. This is a campaign ad as much as it is anything. It is a campaign ad. Is this a little bit of pandering?
There's frustration.
A little bit of pandering.
There's frustration in the base. There's no doubt about Congress's inability under Republican control to get our own things done, our own priorities passed. I am not a fan of changing the process. I don't think it's never the process, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, that's broken if you can't move something through it. It's the people that occupy those seats. I oppose it when Trent Lott did it, and Harry Reid did it, and Mitch McConnell did it, and now we're looking at maybe another wave of changes in the U.S. Senate. It's important, especially for conservatives, I think, to remember that this process really isn't supposed to work. It's only supposed to work when, especially in the Senate, when people in both parties agree and have long-term and think politically in longer terms than the House.
Okay, that's right.
There's not a politician in Indiana who you won't hear the message Washington is broken from, of both parties, quite frankly. So in that sense, is this somewhat of a winning message from Luke Messer?
Well, for primary voters, it probably is. But it's not going to fix the problem. I mean, how many judicial appointments of Barack Obama were not done in the last year because Republicans refused to have hearings? The blue slip, I think, is an antiquated process where one senator can hold up appointments. But somebody ought to tell Congressman Messer that a rule change will not affect term limits. You need a constitutional amendment for that. Good luck getting it through the Senate.
And this is the same tack you see from the White House this week about unelected judges once again holding up the will of the majority. Well, as if there's something wrong. But to Mike's point, let's elaborate. Those unelected judges are there for a reason, and if they're striking down the will of the majority,
it's a bad
That's probably for a reason.
Well, in term limits, I mean, we're going to have a $100 million U.S. Senate campaign. You're telling me that voters are unlikely to knowingly make a decision for the U.S. Senate? I mean, if anything, I'm not a fan of term limits, period, especially in Indiana, where we seem to have, like, rapid turnover of our legislative bodies.
But, that's true.
But if it's appropriate anywhere, it's at a lower level where people aren't paying as close attention.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, do you agree with Luke Messer's Senate reform plan that would eliminate the filibuster and impose term limits? A, yes to eliminating the filibuster, yes to term limits, yes to both, or no, you don't agree. Last week's question, are State House Republicans right to wait to act on DCS until an independent consultant finishes its review? 43% say yes, 57% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the Trump administration this week issued guidance to states that would allow them to establish work requirements for some Medicaid recipients.
The guidance from the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is led by Hoosier healthcare expert Seema Verma, suggests a correlation between good health and work. The rules would allow states to require able-bodied adults on Medicaid to work, volunteer, or participate in job training. The elderly and disabled, pregnant women, and children would be exempt. That falls in line with a request made by some states, including Indiana. The Hoosier State's Medicaid expansion waiver request, made last year, wanted to require able-bodied adults to work, study, train, or volunteer up to 20 hours a week. Indiana's analysis of its proposal shows its program will cost more money and cover fewer people.
And Delaney, why shouldn't able-bodied adults be required to work or study or volunteer if they're using public dollars for their
healthcare? You know, this is a dog whistle issue for Republicans, okay? I mean, are we saying that all Hoosiers and all Americans should have healthcare or only those that are morally fit? I mean, what are we saying on this, okay? First of all, you have to understand with Medicaid, a huge percentage of Medicaid recipients are elderly in nursing homes and indigent. Then you have pregnant women. Then you have disabled.
They're all exempt.
Then you
have
children. Then you have a number of what's left, the overwhelming majority of what's left, are already working, okay? So do you have some people out there that could work and haven't been able to find jobs? The answer is probably yes, okay? How much money do we spend to set up a system, and what incentive do we give to states to impose criteria limiting the number of people that are on Medicaid for whatever the reason? Okay, some people have disabilities that are not permanent disabilities but are temporary disabilities. We're going to have a structure that monitors their hours and what they're doing and everything else. It's going to be a huge, expensive bureaucracy to catch a small percentage of people because we don't think they should have health care because they're not working so they can get the health care. So I guess they don't pay their mortgage or their rent or their eat or anything else just so they can be on Medicaid.
Is there a point, this is a relatively small population of people that this might affect. Is it worth it to go after them in this way?
Yes, it is. It's not just because we want them to work or it's a dog whistle issue. We know for a fact that people that work are healthier. We know that that rates of depression go down. We also know people that, if you talk to people who administer the Medicaid program, they know that when someone presents to the Medicaid program and needs coverage, they probably have other issues going on. So they may have they may have struggle with housing. So you can leverage other services by getting them into the system and leveraging intake at Medicaid and a work program. Medicaid's not what it used to be. It's not pregnant women and children, disabled, and the elderly anymore.
It's still largely there.
It's up to 138% of federal poverty. So you have working poor people covered by the Medicaid program and the Healthy Indiana plan.
Until Messer and
you get to leverage other services and put them in touch with those services, and it benefits them in more ways than just going to work.
But that doesn't address the question. These people are already working, and you're addressing the services. They're already in Medicaid expansion. You're talking about people that are not
zero
working,
to 138%.
And there is no evidence that indicates they get better.
Go read the letter.
That's Indiana Week in Review. For this week, our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.